afternoon. Thanks for coming back and listening so soon. Bring in the stories of everyday folks while you sit back, relax, have a whisper, coach. Here we go with the Trend Speak podcast, bringing you insight or bringing a laugh. Here's the man who might have a plan. Give it up for your host, Trent Pod Scaland.
Thank you, Isaiah. Welcome back, everyone. After a two-month hiatus, that's usually how these that's usually how these breaks go, is they are completely unintended, and they just kind of happen. But you know what? You get back on the bicycle, you get back on the horse, saddle back up, and you just keep rolling along like there never was a break whatsoever. Brand new setup. I just ordered a laptop stand on Amazon so that I can prop the laptop up. But getting a whole new setup in order and everything to get myself ramped and ready to go for 2023. Episode 136. And what better way to come back to the Trent Speaks podcast than to do an episode on scams? Now, that is in no way implying that the Trent Speaks podcast is a scam, but I put a post out asking people, as I work on getting guests back onto the podcast, something I talk about all the time. But I do have the day off today. Today, as of the listening of this podcast, that is. Not that that matters. Anyway, I have the day off and I have it on my to-do list to buckle down and reach out to some folks that have expressed interest in the podcast. So more to come there. But of course, go back. I mean, you should have been doing this during the break of the podcast. But go back and listen to old episodes. Not too old, though, because they start to get cringeworthy when you go back way too far. But go back and listen to the conversations I've had with people. Listen to the episodes I've had with Taylor Zabracki. Listen to Tom Coverley, the Illusionist. Listen to Blake Fly. Listen to whoever it is you want to listen to. And even the cringy ones, I suppose. But if you start to listen, even from the beginning, it's hard for me. I can't even listen to the old originals anymore because you just hear the way that this podcast has matured, and it's awesome. Totally getting off on a tangent here, but of course it wouldn't be the Trent Speaks podcast without going off on some sort of tangent. Anyway, back to this whole purpose of today's podcast. And I put this post out asking people, what is it that isn't a scam, but damn sure feels like a scam? And I got a lot of engagement on the post and everything, so I would love to go through and bring these to you, the audience. Now, one of them I'm going to start right away, and it doesn't surprise me because knowing this individual, it didn't surprise me when he said Joe Biden. And I'm not going to go down this whole politics route. Him and I argue about the way Biden does things all the time. Him and I are always going back and forth and butting heads. Of course, at the end of the day, love and respect him. He is actually a person who has been on this guest a few times. Not going to name him, but because it really doesn't matter. But I'm not going to talk about necessarily the presidential piece because I don't agree with that. But here's where I can come to heads with you, sir. I will say, as I was putting together the notes for this podcast, and I had debated whether or not to even bring this comment up. And so as I was putting the notes together, I said, I'm not going to go down the path of Joe Biden, but here's where I can agree with you. and he didn't say this, but I'm going to go down this route. I would say politicians overall are a scam, but they don't feel like one. And let me tell you why. Because originally, when you think about the House of Representatives, when you think about the Senate, when you think about the Supreme Court, these are people who are supposed to make decisions, who are supposed to drive policy and change based on what the people want, based on what their constituents want. But I know that's not happening. We see too often in politics where it's, I think they're trying to tell themselves a lie. If I'm doing this for my constituents want this. Do they? Or is this what you want? You see, I think politicians have a really hard time drawing the line from their own thoughts and their own views versus what is it that the people who elected you, what is it that the majority of these people who you represent actually want? And again, this comes up in the House, it comes up in the Senate, it comes up in the Supreme Court. It's very interesting when you take that step back and really start to think about that piece. But I fully believe politicians are a scam. And not all of them. Some of them are good. I'm sure there are some that listen and really do a great job trying to represent what it is that they've heard from their constituents, what they've heard people want, the different things that change. But then, again, you get into these butting heads in the House, in the Senate, in the Supreme Court, because you have this two-party system. And people are so freaking tied to their particular party that they're just, it's impossible sometimes for things to get done and for people to actually be, open-minded, which is probably something you really should be if you're going to go into politics. The ability to be open-minded, to see different perspectives, to see different points of view, to actually listen to the people and what it is that they want. That's democracy. Other than being able to vote for who we want to vote for and give our input in terms of reaching out to our elected officials, I don't know how much democracy all wins. I'm going to step off this stool and go to a different stool here. And I will say, I was very happy about these Trent Speaks listeners, which I still feel like we need a name for. But, I really liked that people were respectful of one another. There wasn't any huge argument or anything in the comment section. And people were chirping in, but mostly in agreement with different ideas that got brought up. I want to talk about three of them that really tie into the word transparency for me. And I'll come back to the word transparency, so put that aside for a moment. But the first that a few people had touched on, and then a couple had went a little bit, taking a step further, was insurance. And we were talking about just overall insurance, which I thought was really interesting when people started to bring this one up. And not interesting in the fact that I disagree with it, but interesting because one of my good friends when I was working at Ferris, his name was Chase, and him and I, when he was training me on taking over his territory in the Detroit metro area, this was a conversation I still remember having with him to this day. And this conversation probably took place 8 years or so ago now, 7 or 8 years ago, give or take. And we were just talking about how overall insurance is really this big scam, because the way insurance started out was, you know, if you're paying for this, because if something happens to you, they're going to help cover you. And really, it morphed into this big for-profit world with insurance. And I mean, there's even hospitals out there that are for-profit, which is a whole nother road you could go down. But I think anything for-profit is really, that to me, depending what it is, of course, but when I think about insurance, when I think about healthcare, when I think about, and there's not particular, and not that I can think of one, but I'm just saying as an example, like if there was a food bank that was for profit, so again, like certain things that would be for profit, a church, again, not saying that all of these are, not saying all churches are for-profit, not saying all food banks are for-profit, but when you start to get into the for-profit world, I think that some of those can feel like a scam. And that's where the piece of insurance really comes in, is that's why insurance isn't a scam, but it damn sure feels like a scam. And it's the people who took it a step further, one person had said homeowners insurance, which again, completely agree there. You pay all this money and of course you're hoping nothing happens with your home. And I think you could, they didn't, but I'm sure you could lump car insurance in there. You could lump life insurance in there. Again, things that you pay for that, I mean, like, is the cost really worth it? I would say with life insurance to an extent. Because, I mean, you never know when you're going to die. Like, you just never know when that could happen. And you want to make sure that those that are left after you are set up financially in terms of, you know, taking care of any funeral costs, any other debts or whatever that you may needed to have covered. The one that I thought was really interesting, though, when you talk about insurance that someone had talked about, I used to work with her. Again, all these people I know very well. But she talked about flood insurance. And she was saying how in certain areas, and I guess if you think about it, there's also like hurricane insurance, I guess you could kind of tie into here as well. She did not, based on her geographical location, but I'm sure you could tie hurricane insurance into a similar funnel, I guess, where you're forced to buy based on your geographical location, the certain type of insurance. And so she was talking about flood insurance. Again, I think about like a hurricane insurance for those in Florida, for example, where you have to buy this additional insurance for your home. Now, she was talking to me about how it could range anywhere from $4,000 to $8,000. $4,000 to $8,000 additional on top of the cost that you're already paying for insurance. Right there, agree with you. It definitely feels like a scam. Especially, she brought up the piece about how it's based on a depreciated value, and this is where I'm gonna argue with her a little bit. Because yes, the depreciated values piece is bullshit. Like let's call it what it is. That is stupid. That part right there, I will tell you, is a scam as well, or feels like a scam as well. These again, all of my opinions here. Feels like a scam though, right? However, here's where I'm going to argue with her a little bit. Because yes, I agree. You shouldn't have to pay all this extra money for flood insurance, especially if you opt out of it. Like if I think that's one thing, like you should also have the option. And again, I don't know, I guess is a question I could have asked her, if you have the opportunity to opt out of it. But I feel like if you don't, there should be an opportunity to opt out of that. And you're taking on all liability for whatever. Again, here's my beef with her. Is this depreciated value piece, because when we were going through the home ownership process and getting homeowners insurance and everything. That was the big thing in speaking with my parents about, you know, like, well, I have no idea where to start with homeowners insurance or anything. The big piece we talked about was depreciated value versus actual value. And you can, and again, you might have to shop around, but you can ask or get them to do actual value, not depreciated value. So there is the option to, and again, I don't know what you have available for you, but I know that that does exist out there. So that was one. Number two that I wanted to talk about was rent got brought up. And I agree that to an extent, and again, I'll go back to the previous thought I just had when you talk about insurance or when you talk about for-profit type of organizations. Rent is one of those things of, okay, there is a particular cost to have that unit. But whether it's a unit of an apartment, a townhouse, a house, but I know, and I'll share an example here in a minute, I know you are charging more for rent than what it actually costs to run that place because you are, again, trying to make money off of those people. For example, I have a friend who was in the Chicagoland area. They moved out of the house they were renting, and they were paying pre-COVID rent or COVID rent. I don't remember which one it was. It was significantly cheap. Let's just say it was like, again, I don't know the exact value, but I believe it was somewhere around, like, let's just say $800 or $1,000 a month. They moved out of the house that they were renting or apartment they were renting. Pretty sure it was a house, though. They moved out last year, and their landlord had posted the place for $1,600 a month in rent. And it was still gone in 2 weeks. They almost doubled, if not doubled, rent, still rented it out. And so think about how much money they're going to be making a year because they had the ability to do that. So I would agree with rent to an extent. And the third one that I want to lump in under this transparency, and again, I'll come back to the word transparency here in a moment, but it's taxes. Someone brought this up. Someone replied and said, you know, I agree. I was actually just going to say that. They said, you know, like, taxes feel like this scam, but I do love the amazing schools, the infrastructure, the things like that you can do. And so I think really, in my mind, what it boils down to is there needs to be a better track of where is this money going. And I thought about that for taxes, and then I said, you really could say that for rent, you could say that for insurance, which is why I really lumped it those three in with the word transparency. We need transparency. We need to know where is this money going when we're paying above and beyond what it actually costs to run, what it actually costs to do X, Y, and Z. Tell me where every single tax dollar is going and how it's being spent. I also think, and this wasn't explicitly said within the comments, but I also think taxes feel like a scam in general. Because why do other countries, like Canada, for example, I know someone who lives in Canada. And she was even saying recently, I was talking to her over the new year, and she was saying how dumb our taxes are. She said, we just are told, like, this is what you're paying, whereas here, you're told, take a guess. Just, you know what? Why don't you look at all these documents you have? Take a stab in the dark at how much you pay, but just so you know, you are signing that this is a guess, and if it's not right, you could be audited and or imprisoned and or fined. But good luck. We do wish you the best of luck. BS. So just tell us how much we pay. Stop making this a guessing game. I want to dive into a couple of the most popular ones here, but allow me to take a sip of LaCroix. This isn't even an ad, but it should be. Yeah, how come we don't get ads for this show? It's a good question. All right. All right. So, diving into some of the big ones, the hard hitters that were on the post. Though before we do, I want to talk about something that came to mind, and then that'll dovetail me into our first one. One of the first ones that came to mind was, this really just all ties together in a bow, right? So when you think about time off from an employer, here's what I think is not the best business scheme in my mind. Why is sick pay lumped in to PTO? There should be a vacation bank, and there should be a sick bank. And actually, the sick bank, I don't even care if you give it to me in a lump sum or I have to accrue it. Now, a lump sum would be great, but I would take having to accrue it. And actually, now that I think about this, this comes up because someone had brought this up in the comments. And they said, earning PTO. So when I, again, what's not a scam but feels like a scam? Their response was earning PTO instead of getting it in a lump when working full time. And I did ask if they would mind providing further insights. Unfortunately, at the time of the recording of this podcast, have not heard back, because I'd be really curious to hear why they feel like earning it versus getting it in a lump sum feels like a scam. Because I'm fortunate where I do get the lump, and I'm grateful for that. I've actually had a few jobs where it's been the lump sum, and it's really nice. I'm not gonna lie. I think that is the best approach in my mind. As an employer, the best approach is to lump sum it at the top of the year, so you know how much you have. You can plan accordingly. I mean, it feels, I can see from her vantage point how it feels icky having to accrue it. But you could make the argument that you aren't paid in advance. Like, you have to work for your time. And so in a way, you do need to earn the vacation. However, if you think about it from a benefit standpoint, if I say you get 14 days off a year, 14 paid vacation days off a year, but you have to accrue them. Versus company B that says you get 14 paid days off a year and we'll actually front load them right to you, or we will prorate it based on your start date. Well, I can already tell you, I'm going to pick, if everything else is comparable, I'm going to pick the company that's going to give it to me up front, because why am I going to go somewhere where I have to earn it? And again, she hasn't replied, but I can see if it's part of the benefits package, then it should be given to you right away. It shouldn't be something you have to wait to use. Because then you get stuck in a point where you might be negative PTO, like someone I know, who didn't have PTO right away, started around the holiday season, and so they are at negative PTO hours already, because it didn't have any PTO to use, and of course you need to take the time off. I also think it's a scam that they don't get the holidays off for PTO or extra pay. I don't know. Need to dive further in that, but I digress. I will say, I know the whole PTO sick pay thing from previous conversations with people has occurred at hospitals in the past. And so you think about those nurses who were working during COVID and everything, being forced to use their paid vacation time to not go to work instead of being able to use some sort of sick pay. There was another one that I actually didn't write down, and so I do want to touch on that before we dive into the popular ones here. Again, this was someone I asked for further insights from. Unfortunately, they were unable to get back to me before the recording of the podcast, but they said buying a car from a dealership, and I said, would you mind diving a little bit further in here, providing a little bit more clarification for me? And though they didn't get back to me, I can see where this would feel like a scam. Because if you already know going to a dealership that you're going to have to negotiate, you're going to have to try and bargain down for a lower price, why not just tell me the lowest price you'll accept that vehicle for? Why do I have to go in and haggle and walk away and try to keep the ball in my court as much as possible just to get a damn car? So I can see that one. I if that's where you're coming from, I can see that. All right, back to this whole time off thing. Here was one that was very popular as a comment. 8 people liked this comment in agreement. 2 people replied to that saying, Trent, you have to talk about this one on your podcast. So let's go. No maternity leave. No paid maternity leave is at what I think they were going for. And I can see that. I know there's hesitation in my voice, but I can see that. Talking to a good friend of mine, I've known her for, how long have we known each other? 13 years now. Was talking to her before hitting record on the podcast. And she informed me, and she sent me a couple articles, but she did inform me that the U.S. is the only developed nation who doesn't have paid maternity leave. Listen to this article from the New York Times. The U.S. is one of 7 countries without national paid maternity leave. Some of those nations, small islands in the Western Pacific, are too small to even be seen on the map that is provided in the article. The average length for those that have the leave is 29 weeks. 4 weeks would also be significantly less than the 12 weeks of paid parental leave given to federal workers in the United States, and less than the leave that has been passed in 9 states and in the District of Columbia. She also sent me another view that was a series of bar graphs. And Estonia has actually 86 weeks of paid leave, which I'll be honest with you, I think is excessive. Because if you do the math, and I'm going to do it right now, on 86 weeks, let's just assume that there's 4 weeks in a month. So divided that by 4, that is over a year. That is a year and a half of paid maternity leave. And I will say, I think that's excessive. I think it's great. But that's a long time to be gone. And I know people will disagree with me there. But I think 86 is excessive. I think that 16 weeks is a good number, in my opinion. 4 months. Of course, I would argue that you could go to 6 months and choose to take that time. Actually, you know what? Yeah, I'll go 6 months and you can take a straight 6 months, or you can break that up however you see fit. So maybe I want to take, maybe I'm a new mom, or why am I using a mom? Maybe I'm a dad and I want to take 4 weeks and then, or sorry, 4 months. And then my other 2 months of leave that I have, I could use later if I wanted to, or I just lose it. Or maybe I take 6 months. It's whatever you want. I recognize that's a lot of time to be gone for, but your job shouldn't be your life. We spend so much time at work. We should be able to be human. So that was a big one, the maternity leave. Here is the other big one. And I completely agree. I will say, though, that I learned things through my research, and I'm not sure if people know this or not. So we'll dive right in here. Something that came up from a couple different people, and there were a lot of reactions between these two comments. Again, another one that was said, Trent, you need to talk about this one on your podcast for, was feminine products and how it should be covered by health insurance. Someone also mentioned there is something called pink tax on feminine products and just, you know, women's things in general. And so let's break that up a little bit. First, let's tackle what pink tax is. If you're unfamiliar with what pink tax is, you're not alone, because I was also unfamiliar with pink tax. And a quick Google of pink tax will tell you this, that it's not an actual tax in any literal sense. However, it is, and I quote from Wikipedia. Yes, I'm going to use Wikipedia, because if you look elsewhere, it tells you basically the same thing. Actually, you know what? Let's use this one. TheBalanceMoney.com says this. This is from January 11th of 2023. The pink tax refers to the general tendency for products marketed toward women consumers to be more expensive than those marketed toward men. I want to read you this Wikipedia one, though. Talks a little bit further about it. Has the same first sentence. The second sentence is, this phenomenon is often attributed toward gender-based price discrimination, whose name stems from the observation that many of the affected products are pink. Upon further research, there are a few, and I quote, a few state and local governments have laws to prohibit price discrimination based on gender, but the federal government does not, end quote. So you might be thinking to yourself, oh, okay, so women's things are priced more than male things? Prove it. Well, damn sure it will. Was trying to find some examples for you. And these are real life examples. Here's a BuzzFeed article. 14 examples of the pink tax that prove women literally get charged more for these same products. Here is a photo. Same items inside. Both are hotel personal care kits. There's a his and a hers. Same products inside. The male version, the blue version, is $7.59, where the female version is $9.99. Let's find another one here. This is a... looks like a Contigo food container for kids. This one has a blue and yellow top on it. And then the second one has a light blue and a dark pink top on it. Original cost and then sale cost. So the original cost of each of them, your blue one is $12.99 and your pink one is $14.99. And then your sale price for the blue one is $11.69 and your sale price for the female one or the pink one is $13.49. This was at Target. There is a Puma backpack. Exact same backpack. One is a Puma Girls Evercat Duo backpack. That's the first one. The second one is a Puma Boys Evercat Duo backpack. One, the second one is obviously just black. The first one has pink tie-dye all over it. That pink one is $24.99, while the boys' backpack is at $19.99. And so as I was going through here and looking, I wasn't sure if... maybe... And this sounds so stupid. But does the color pink cost more to make? And let me tell you. A quick Google search of does the color pink cost more to make will give you this as the top result. There is no difference between these products, and they aren't manufactured in a way which would cause significant price disparity. Regarding the pricing argument, some people claim pink dye costs more than other commonly used colors, but there is no truth to this statement. That's according to SpartanShield.org. And there are articles out there, this one from Bankrate.com does tell you that the pink tax has because of the pink tax, the average woman is paying $1,300 more a year than the male counterpart is. And this is in hair products, medicine, bike helmets, it's everywhere. And so the question became, why does health insurance not cover feminine products? Number one, you already got this pink tax, and you're being forced to buy feminine products because you, as one of my friends put it, you bleed for 6 days out of the month. And I'd love to read you her direct comment when she posted on here. you'll give me just a moment to pull it up. And this is what she said. The fact that I have to buy tampons every month. I didn't sign up to bleed uncontrollably for 6 days a month. But not a scam because it also means I'm not pregnant. Hallelujah. So I did a little bit more diving into this because the other person who had brought up this topic had said, why doesn't health insurance cover this? And I agree. Why doesn't health insurance cover this? In talking with a friend and doing a quick Google search, I learned that an HSA account will actually cover the cost of feminine products. You can pay for those with an HSA. You can also pay with an FSA, which also covers them. But them being covered really only makes them tax-free, one of my girlfriends said. And I said, I don't even know what an FSA is. And this is what a friend of mine who is a financial advisor had said. They had told me, similar to an HSA, but it doesn't roll over. Plans that have an HSA are higher deductible plans, but the max for your HSA is higher. Plans that have an FSA are lower deductible, but you get less money in the FSA, and if you don't use it, you lose it. HSAs, though, are one of the best investment accounts. So I agree. Health insurance, if I just have basic health insurance, that should cover a feminine product. But if you did not know, and again, I'm not saying that it's like the greatest thing in the world that you have to have an HSA or an FSA to cover these products. Completely, I'm sure you agree with this, but completely stupid that you have to have a certain account in order to get that paid for. It should be any health insurance. But if you were not aware, if you have an HSA or an FSA, they will cover the cost of that. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, listeners of all ages, thank you for tuning in and listening to what feels like a scam but is not a scam episode of the podcast. Looking forward to being back with you all and bringing you episodes, getting to learn more about all of you and bringing the stories of others directly into your home. Until next week, everyone, this has been Trent. Have a blessed week.